What's the universal time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting 81 days until the U.S. presidential election. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton met with law enforcement leaders in New York City Thursday, joining with chiefs of police days after Republican Donald Trump accused her of being against the police.
We have to be clear-eyed about the challenges we face. We can't ignore them, and certainly we must not inflame them. We need to work together to bridge our divides, not stoke even more divisiveness.
Clinton says the nation needs to work together to repair the bonds of trust and respect between police officers and communities and not stoke more division. For the first time, Republican Donald Trump says he regrets some of his most heated campaign statements.
And believe it or not, I regret it.
Trump is reading from prepared marks using a teleprompter instead of his usually off-the-cuff rally style after reshaping his campaign team. Brazilian police said Thursday that swimmer Ryan Lochte and three U.S. teammates were not robbed after a night of partying, and the intoxicated athletes instead vandalized a gas station bathroom and were questioned by armed guards before they paid for the damage and left. Despite the ire of police, though, Rio game organizers defended the swimmers, insisting that it was just innocent. Rio 2016 spokesman Mario Andrada.
You know, let's give these kids a break. You know, they, you know, sometimes you take actions that you later regret.
It's not clear whether the athletes will be formally charged. On Wall Street, U.S. stocks closed with gains on Thursday. The Dow gained 23 points. You're listening to VOA News. Firefighters in the western U.S. state of California have made limited progress containing a wildfire that has torched nearly 13,000 hectares, incinerated homes, and forced tens of thousands of people to evacuate. Jake Rodriguez with the U.S. Forest Service says the fire season outlook is not good.
We're expecting to continue to see unpredictable and erratic fire behavior. It's going to continue to be a challenge. We're going to continue to see spotting of up to a quarter to a half mile, and the probability of ignition is very high. It's at about 100%, which means that just about every ember that lands in vegetation can ignite.
Fire officials said dozens of homes have been burned, but they're not able to confirm a number. The fire, which began on Tuesday in a mountainous area north of the city of San Bernardino, burning brush and sending large amounts of smoke into the sky. More than 1,500 firefighters are already on the ground there, and more are on the way to help. California is used to seeing wildfires during the warm summer months, but this fire grew unusually quickly. How it started is still under investigation. Next month, President Barack Obama will make what is expected to be his last official trip to Asia. The White House announced Thursday the president will travel on September 2nd to China to attend the G20 summit. He will then go to Laos, making him the first U.S. president to visit that Southeast Asian nation. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said Obama will hold meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping as tensions continue to rise in the region over the South China Sea and North Korea's nuclear ambitions. The Russian military said Thursday it is ready to back a UN call for weekly ceasefires for Syria's contested city of Aleppo, as haunting footage of a young boy's rescue from the aftermath of an airstrike has shaken global media. UN envoy Stefan de Mistura cut short a meeting tasked with de-escalating the violence, saying there's no sense in holding the meeting in light of the obstacles to delivering aid.
There was no sense to have a humanitarian meeting today unless we got some action on the humanitarian side in Syria.
Fighting has increasingly frustrated the UN's efforts to fulfill its humanitarian mandate. In Rio, Usain Bolt has won his third straight Olympic gold medal in 200 meters. And U.S. heavy metal rock band Metallica announced Thursday it is releasing its first album in 8 years, the longest Metallica has ever gone between studio albums. Hardwired to Self-Destruct will feature 80 minutes of music from the band. It's scheduled for release November 18th. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Friday, August 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations says South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar fled to the Democratic Republic of Congo, possibly ill or injured.
We can confirm that an operation was undertaken by MONUSCO on humanitarian grounds to facilitate the extraction of Riek Machar, his wife, and 10 others from a location in the DRC in support of the DRC authority.
That's UN spokesman Farang Haq. But the DRC government says it has no knowledge of Machar being in the DRC. A former U.S. special envoy for Sudan says South Sudan should be put under a United Nations trusteeship. Zimbabwe police break up a street vendors' protest. And Zambia's opposition UPND calls for a mass turnout today as it presents a petition to the Constitutional Court.
To file a petition, you require lawyers and a few people. You don't need to have a big group of people descending on the court to present a petition. First and foremost, it's unreasonable.
Frank Bualia is the deputy campaign manager for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. Zimbabwe farmers get high nutrient seeds to aid drought recovery, and displaced people in Nigeria's Borno state capital of Maiduguri face hunger. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan's former first vice president, Riek Machar, has fled to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, where he may be ill or injured. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
UN spokesman Farhan Haq told reporters that Machar and a small group of people turned up in the DRC on Wednesday. The UN mission there, known as MONUSCO, was alerted to his presence and contacted the Congolese government. The government asked them to facilitate the group's transfer from an area near the DRC-South Sudan border to a location inside Congo, which the UN has not revealed.
We can confirm that an operation was undertaken by MONUSCO on humanitarian grounds to facilitate the extraction of Riek Machar, his wife, and 10 others from a location in the DRC in support of the DRC authorities.
Haq said that the UN mission in South Sudan played no part in Machar's arrival in the DRC. Asked whether Machar required medical care, Haq said, "We have been providing him with whatever medical assistance he needs." Sources tell VOA that the former leader was either ill, injured, or possibly both when peacekeepers met him in the DRC. Machar has been in hiding since early July following clashes between his supporters and government troops in South Sudan's capital, Juba, that killed more than 300 people. President Salva Kiir fired Machar as first vice president and replaced him with Taban Dengai, who was backed by a breakaway faction of Machar's SPLM-IO movement. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The Democratic Republic of Congo government says it is not aware that South Sudan rebel leader and former first vice president Riek Machar is in the DRC. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the government only heard rumors that Machar was near the DRC border, but not within the country. UN spokesman Farhan Haq confirmed Thursday that the UN mission in the DRC, known as MONUSCO, facilitated an operation to extract Machar, his wife, and 10 others from a location in the DRC in support of the DRC authorities. Mende says his government is not aware of Machar being in the DRC or of any request for him to be brought into the country.
I'm not aware of that information, and I can't confirm it. What we heard is rumors that he is in the border near the Democratic Republic of Congo, but not within the Democratic Republic of Congo. So nobody asked for him a request for entering the DRC.
So the United Nations did not ask your government for him to come to the DRC?
I don't know if some requests have been put for that. But I'm not aware. I'm not informed as the spokesperson of the government.
If there was a request, would your government accept him to come to the DRC?
I can't respond to a question that have not yet been asked to us. So what I'm telling you is that we are not aware that he is in Congo or he have requested to come in Congo. This is all I can tell you.
So I hear, Mr. Minister, that your government has imposed a curfew in eastern Congo.
No, that is the measures that have been taken by local authorities in Beni town and around because We saw some individuals trying to go in the very place where this crime took place, where they killed almost 40 people. And the judiciary is busy working, searching, because we have arrested some individuals of various citizenship, the terrorists, and we can't allow people to go there, so-called demonstrations, in a place where a crime have been committed, while officials are still busy searching and working for the judiciary.
Minister, you say that you're fighting terrorists. I know there are some rebel groups fighting in the eastern part of your country. Do you suspect that the violence there is some rebel group are responsible for the violence?
We have arrested the people of various nationalities. There are some Somalians, some Ethiopians, Tanzanians, Rwandans, Sudanese, and Congolese. And seeing the way they are working and according to documents we found in their strongholds that have been destroyed by our army, it seems that there is cooperation between them and groups like Shabab. That is why we came to the conclusion that those are terrorists and that we are, in fact, victim of a terrorist offensive.
Back to the situation on the former South Sudan first vice president. And Minister, so you are saying that Riek Machar, you have no knowledge if he is in the DRC or not?
No, we had only rumors that he is somewhere near the border between South Sudan and the DRC, but not within the DRC.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The former U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Ambassador Princeton Lyman, says South Sudan should be put under the trusteeship of the United Nations and the African Union. Lyman says the regional bloc, IGA, and its international partners should not trust President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar with the implementation of the one-year-old peace deal.
We knew there was a history of such divisions within South Sudan, but we were assured that there was now a new unity. A great deal of investment in government institutions had gone into the country. But yes, surprised, but most of all, deeply, deeply disappointed.
What steps should be taken to put the country on life-supporting machine, just to use your words?
What is needed is a much stronger international presence, and that's both politically as well as in terms of these additional security forces, because the present peace process is not working. President Kiir and certainly elements of the opposition have not been cooperating in carrying it out. There's no real pressure from the surrounding countries. And without that, we still see one human rights depredation after another. So the first step is for the neighboring countries, IGAD, to agree that the present peace process needs to be amended and amended very strongly with an international administrator over the country and security forces and an arms embargo and a number of other steps to bring the situation under control.
And this international administrator, who is that person going to be, and which body is going to be this administrator to handle this difficult situation?
Well, what we suggested is that the UN and the Africa Union come together and determine exactly how this should work.
Ambassador Lyman, you have been working with President Kiir and Riek Machar for quite a long time before you left the administration. What were these people telling you in your interaction with them? Do they look like serious leaders who love their people, who love their country?
Well, if you ask them, of course, that's what they say. What we found in the last year that I was still the envoy was that President Kiir was moving steadily and unfortunately under the influence of people telling him that his critics were his enemies. And he formed a special self-protection brigade. He began to crack down on journalists. He began to crack down on NGOs. All of this was taking place even in 2012, and I raised it with him. But he seems to be moving very much in that direction. Riek Machar made it clear also in that year that he was going to challenge the president for president. Now, what should have happened is that the political party should have addressed that one way or another. That's what political parties do. But what was revealed was that the SPLM was a weak institution as a party, and that it was still a military government with an army that fractured quickly into different militias. So the political structures just simply weren't there to manage this kind of rivalry.
Ambassador Princeton Lyman is the former U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 19th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party has called on the police to prevent thousands of supporters of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, from gathering today, Friday, at the Constitutional Court. The country's main opposition party will ask the court to challenge the outcome of the August 11th presidential election, in which incumbent President Edgar Lungu won re-election. The UPND has urged its supporters to come to the court to support the petition. But President Lungu's deputy campaign manager, Frank Bualia, says a mass gathering of UPND supporters could create tension and possible violence.
The tone in the UPND calling for their members to turn up in huge crowds to go to courts where they intend to file an election petition, the tone is not that of peace. It is a tone of incitement to violence. It is a tone of bitterness and a lot of anger. In the past, when situations have not been as tense, as volatile as it is today, and UPND has gathered in a similar manner, we have had situations where their cadres have deliberately clashed with the police, leaving many police officers injured, forcing them to allegedly open fire, and somebody was killed.
So are you calling on the police to prevent their gathering?
The police should not prevent their gathering in a small number to go and file the petition. To file a petition, you require lawyers and a few people. You don't need to have a big group of people descending on the court to present a petition. First and foremost, it's unreasonable. Secondly, it's not the way things are done. Thirdly, Zambia has grown, and traffic jams are everywhere. So we don't want UPND to be allowed to inconvenience our people. Thirdly, the background is that of a party that is very bitter and angry, claiming that their vote was stolen. So the wise thing to do on the part of UPND leadership is not to congregate their members at the High Court, especially that for some time now, even before the election, they were citing their members to reject the outcome of the election long before we voted, and there were a warning of Armageddon in Zambia after the election.
Well, some people are saying the call that the police should not allow their gathering basically infringes on their constitutional right to assemble and their constitutional right to petition. And if they are calling on their members, it is none of the business of the Patriotic Party because they are petitioning against the victory won or attained by President Lungu and his PF on the presidential election front. What do you say to such criticisms?
Any reasonable person understands that we are not objecting to their petitioning our victory, the victory of President Edgar Lungu. What we are saying is that the police should not allow them to do what is unreasonable, having thousands of people going to present the petition. They will use that opportunity to cause chaos and havoc. Their constitutional right to assemble, to express themselves and so on is respected. And this is why we are saying the police should not allow them to have a big gathering at the court.
Frank Bualia is the deputy campaign manager for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Zimbabwe police yesterday severely beat up a prominent activist who led some street vendors to the Harare Central Police Station to express their dismay over alleged police brutality. Thomas Chiripasi was there and filed this report.
Zorwadza, who is the board chairperson of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, arrived at the Harare Central Police Station together with another activist, Patson Dzamara while holding flowers that they attempted to distribute to police officers who had already mounted a barricade. Some police officers approached Zorwadza, who tried to explain that their demonstration was going to be peaceful, but in no time, some baton-wielding officers came out of the station in full speed and assaulted Zorwadza. He'd earlier told reporters that their demonstration was meant to send a message to the police that they were supposed to protect citizens and not to victimize them when they are demonstrating against problems they are facing.
For the first time in the history of Zimbabwe, we have decided to take head-on Mapurisa right by their doorstep, right by their gate. Our campaign is a campaign to promote peace in Zimbabwe, to promote peace in a militarized state.
He said police were violating the constitution whenever they violently dispersed peaceful protesters.
The police are actually showing the highest level of disrespect to the president of the Republic of Zimbabwe.
Dzamara weighed in, saying police were violating citizens' right to freedoms of assembly and expression.
We do not want war in this nation. Of course, we know whatever they are doing, whatever they've done, they've been trying to push us to a point where we say we are in a war situation. But we do not want that. We want peace, we want love, we want a Zimbabwe where we are able to express ourselves and still live peacefully after expressing ourselves.
After assaulting Zorwadza, the cops went on to beat up people who were at the charge office bus terminus, and in the process, an elderly woman was injured on her head, while another unidentified woman was arrested. It could not be established how many people were part of the planned protest, as most activists were among people who were boarding commuter omnibuses at the terminus. Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, told Studio 7 that she was unable to comment on what happened at Harare Central Station, claiming that she was yet to be briefed about the incident. President Mugabe told the nation recently his government would not allow any form of protest. This, despite constitutional provisions allowing peaceful demonstrations. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has started distributing high-nutrient crop seed varieties in Zimbabwe to help farmers recover from two seasons of drought that decimated recent harvest. Sebastian Mofu has the story for VOA from Harare.
The Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, is distributing biofortified maize and bean seeds to farmers impacted by drought in Zimbabwe. A good harvest this coming March is key to helping farmers escape from this lengthy food crisis. VOA incumbent Chimimba David Piri, the head of the FAO for Southern Africa, to a seed distribution outside the capital, Harare.
We have had two bad seasons, and a lot of farmers do not have the adequate seed. We need to support the farmers to have the seed that they need for them to grow this season. Also to avoid the problem of having a continued humanitarian support. So it is very important that farmers plant and on time this year so that we avert hunger for next season as well, which would be very difficult for Zimbabwe, given that their own resilience, which has been eroded over the past 2 years, I don't think they can take it anymore.
Millions of people across Southern Africa are dealing with the food shortages as a result of El Nino-induced drought. In March, the UN Children's Fund said Zimbabwe is facing its worst child malnutrition rates in 15 years. Rural areas have been hit especially hard. The seeds being distributed are designed to produce more nutritious crops. Farmer Miriam Chagwenja from Silovela, about 300 kilometers southwest of Harare, planted some of the biofortified maize and beans in her field in February. She obtained them as part of an initiative funded by the British government, which is also funding this FAO program.
Beans, it's in a muko, we work anaka.
wakakura plus dzinopa.
She says, I would encourage others to go on board and join. I noticed that for the beans, you get more yields compared to other ordinary varieties. She says the beans have a higher iron content, which is good for pregnant women. The FAO says the ongoing seed distribution is targeting about 127,000 smallholder farm households in 8 districts before it rolls out to other parts of the country. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
7 years of war against Boko Haram have left northeastern Nigeria in the grips of a humanitarian emergency. Borno State has borne the brunt of the violence and is now feeling the pain of an increase in food shortage. Chika Odua reports.
More than a million Nigerians have fled to the Borno State capital, Maiduguri, to escape the raids on villages, the suicide bombings, and the military operations that have characterized the Boko Haram insurgency. Many of them live in shanty settlements where they have little access to food and clean water. Across the city, people are squatting in abandoned fields, uncompleted buildings, and under trees. To survive, many rely on leaves they gather from the fields. Sometimes they go 2 or 3 days without eating. It is not what they expected. We came to Maiduguri because of high expectations we had that things will be better if we are here. Ya Falmata is an elderly woman. She has set up a tent made of twigs and bamboo in the middle of a field where more than 13,000 people are living and trying to survive.
They become malnourished because they do not eat and they are not adequately fed. And there's no food.
Rebecca Smith is a nurse with Doctors Without Borders. She sees some of the most extreme cases of illness at a hospital that the organization has set up.
These cases are malnourished children that come with respiratory distress that needs O2 therapy, that needs blood transfusion, that are very, very sick. Common cases are from disease or problems like coming down with measles, whooping cough.
Relief agencies have warned of a possible famine in parts of Borno State, where fighting between government forces and Boko Haram has discouraged farming and cut off some areas from outside aid. In the local markets, the price of produce has increased because of the food shortage. The government runs displaced persons camps, but not enough for everyone who needs shelter. And some Nigerians say food distribution in the camps is unfair. Maka Mustafa lives in a warehouse with dozens of other families. We don't know the reason why, but the distributors in the camps do not distribute food to everyone. Some people will get, and some people will not. Some help is slowly coming. Children gather to wait for a food delivery truck from a local charity. They sing happy songs from happier times. Their parents and guardians hope the happier times will return. Chika Odua for VOA News, Maiduguri, Nigeria.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of news. South Sudan's former first vice president, Riek Machar, has fled to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, where he may be ill. That's it for this Friday, August 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.